Welcome to Bishop Sheridan Presents on the Catholic Radio Network. Bishop Sheridan Presents is a weekly roundtable discussion of events and issues facing the church and culture today. Bishop Sheridan Presents is a production of the Diocese of Colorado Springs and the Catholic Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Bishop Michael Sheridan of the Diocese of Colorado Springs.
Hello and welcome, everyone. This is Bishop Michael Sheridan, and today's program, we're going to discuss natural family planning, something that probably most listeners have heard of but may not be terribly familiar with. Each year in July, we celebrate nationally Natural Family Planning Awareness Week. And even as we record this program, we're noting the 42nd anniversary of the promulgation of Pope Paul VI's encyclical letter, Humanae Vitae. So it's kind of a timely discussion, and joining us for this discussion are Charlie and Christine McIntyre, Mr. and Mrs. McIntyre. Charlie and Christine are a natural family planning teaching couple here in the Diocese of Colorado Springs, and I think have a great deal to teach us, as well as to do their own reflection on natural family planning in their own lives. So welcome to you, Charlie and Christine. And let's just begin our discussion today by generally talking about what natural family planning is.
Certainly. Thank you, and thanks for having us. Maybe, Christine, do you want to sort of give that answer there?
Yeah, I just natural family planning is just fertility awareness. It's a knowledge of a couple's fertility by reading the body signs of fertility and infertility of a woman, whereby married couples can apply the knowledge either to postpone or to achieve pregnancy. So that's kind of the gist of what
it's important to note. You said whereby a couple can either delay or postpone pregnancy or try to achieve pregnancy. I think that's one of the,
right,
the misunderstandings of NFP or natural family planning, is it's simply used to avoid pregnancy, but not true.
That's definitely not true. We tend to focus on avoiding pregnancy, but in our own experience teaching, women that have had low fertility, a couple that might have low fertility, that think they need to seek out a doctor for maybe reproductive technology, doesn't necessarily have to do that if they take the class, where they can really zero in on the times that they are fertile. So in that way, it's a really positive thing, and I think a lot of people don't know that that's out there as part of being able to achieve pregnancy.
Yeah, I think it's important to focus on the fact that by working with a woman and her husband, working with their fertility, avoids a lot of the pitfalls of negative side effects of medicine and then the moral implications that many of the reproductive technologies bring about. And that's what's so great about NFP, is that we are able to work with God's plan in a way and not try to continue to come up with ways to kind of contravene God's plan and work against it.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that notion of God's plan, would you, Charlie? What is God's plan for man and woman into which natural family planning fits so well?
Well, that's a big question in and of itself. If we're going to look at it at its very base, it's an opportunity, as is presented in Genesis, for a man and woman to come together, to cleave, as it says, and become one with each other for mutual support of each other, the husband and the wife, and no less important than to bring life into the world, to continue God's plan for the human race, which is to glorify him and his kingdom through developing a family and having children. And God's plan is for that to be done within the confines of marriage and with a supportive relationship where the husband and the wife are supporting each other. I think that's the general context I would put in terms of looking at what is God's plan. Now, there's a lot more detail to fill in, but
that's right. This is a lot of what Pope John Paul II talked about in his theology, the theology of the body talks, right, over several years, which have now been compiled into a book, Theology of the Body. The very term natural family planning, of course, contrasts it with, I guess, what we could call artificial family planning. Married couples, I guess, have had concerns about and practiced family planning in many different ways, one of which is, I guess, the artificial way, contraception. And I think we know that even by way of the natural law, our understanding of the meaning, the integrity of the Marriage Act, contraception violates that integrity, right?
I think it's kind of inherent in the name, contra being against. And the beauty of what the Church has always understood, although maybe not as artfully as expressed as we would like to have had it throughout time, is that we, in anything we do, but even especially in the marital act and within a marriage, to work with God's plan and not against God's plan. So contraception already should set up some, you know, hazard signs for us where we're seeing already we're talking about going against.
If we go back to Pope Paul VI, 1968 encyclical Humanae Vitae on the regulation of human birth, he really reiterated there the constant teaching of the Church, although he enlarged it, he filled it out somewhat, in which he taught again, even in the face of some opposition from his own theological advisory commission, that every single act of human intercourse is always an act that is unitive and procreative. Obviously, not necessarily always resulting in the procreation of a child, but those two cannot be separated. This must always be an act of love between husband and wife, and it must always be open to the procreation of children. And so with any kind of contraception, it splits those two. It takes one out. And that's what I was saying about the violating the very integrity of the marital act. But that's not the case with natural family planning, is it?
No, not at all. That's the nice thing about natural family planning is that you know, if a couple sits down, it forces a couple every month to have to kind of sit down and talk about where they're at. And if, you know, they're at a place where, okay, we've got these things going on, I don't think, you know, trying to conceive right now is a good idea or something that we need to be doing, then you abstain during that time. And find other ways to show affection, show love, and that sort of thing. And then you use the infertile time. So sometimes people will say, oh, that's, you know, just Catholic birth control. But really, you're not using that time. You're saying you're working with God. And
yeah, I think I would, you know, we can talk about it in terms of respecting God's plan, and there's a fundamental difference there. People might want to call it splitting hairs, but I think it's really a fundamental difference of recognizing God's presence within the couple as expressed through fertility and respecting it versus dominating it. And that's where the real difference comes in between natural family planning and contraception.
Talk about that for just a minute, Charlie. What do you mean by respect versus dominate?
When I say dominating God's plan in our human wisdom, which is often quite flawed, we've come up with ways that seems to help in terms of fertility. And what I mean are the different methods of contraception that are available. But what those really do are cover up or dominate or subjugate the way we've been created in God's infinite wisdom and plan for humanity. And it uses our human wisdom and our human methods to try to push that down. Now, the reality is that that can only happen for so long before we start seeing some negative results, either for the couples or for society as a whole.
I think it is very important, because I've heard this criticism before. You brought it up, Christine, that natural family planning is really nothing other than, what is it, Catholic birth control. And I guess it's okay, it's true to say that natural family planning could be used in order to delay the conception of a child, which is a kind of birth control, but essentially different than contraception. Another way of looking at it is, even though for that moment the ends may be the same, the means to the ends are quite different. And this is something I find maybe in today's world is very difficult sometimes for people to distinguish. In other words, if we see a good end, many people will say any way to achieve that end is fine. Or at least is acceptable. I think we've even seen that kind of logic used in those who would propose the advisability of abortion in some cases. If in fact this would lead to relieving a woman of the burden of a pregnancy and raising a child, that's a good end. We do what we need to do to achieve that end. So that distinction is important, I think. To make also. It is quite different to say we're going to, for good reason, abstain from intercourse for a period, for these fertile periods. It's another thing to say we will engage in intercourse. We will simply impede, we will overcome, we will try to cover over what the very meaning of that act is intrinsically. And that's a big difference.
I think it's a big difference, and I also think, I mean, you just realize that fertile time is God's time, like that's sacred time. And so if at that time of the month and you're discussing with your spouse that you're wanting to avoid pregnancy, then you know that we don't use God's time, you know, and you can offer that as a sacrifice in some way. Because it can be a difficult time to, you know, abstain or whatever. But I think that's how Charlie and I have always looked at that, as sacred time. And not that the phase three is not sacred, but we know that is special time reserved for the couple and God to come together to make another baby.
Yeah, Bishop, I think you really hit on a key phrase there when you say good reason. And that's what was introduced with Humanae Vitae, was a discussion of what constitutes a good reason for a couple to not have children at a given time. There's been some difficulty in understanding perhaps how translations of the encyclical came about, but in the end, it's an issue of good reasons. And you can take NFP and practice it for bad reasons.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think that's a very worthwhile discussion to get into, because even something that is good can be used for the very wrong reasons. But we're coming up now to a time for a break, and so I think when we return, let's talk a little bit more about that NFP, any kind of decision, especially to delay the conception of a child, has to be done for good reason and according to God's own law. So we'll take that up in just a moment when we come back.
The Colorado Catholic Herald's blog offers a chance for you to be heard on Catholic issues. Click on the red blog link at coloradocatholicherald.com and join the discussion. The Colorado Catholic Herald, bringing the Catholic world to you.
Welcome back. I'm here with Charlie and Christine McIntyre, who are natural family planning, a teaching couple here in the Diocese of Colorado Springs. We're going to talk a little bit later in the program about your experiences of teaching and the difference that's made in the lives of the couples that you've had an opportunity to be with. Just before the break, we were talking about the fact that while natural family planning, because it is natural, because it does pay attention to the natural law, is an acceptable way of spacing, delaying the conception of a child, spacing children in a marriage. But we noted that, as the church says, even that must be done for the proper reasons. Why don't you talk a little bit about that, and maybe some of those things that we might consider not very good reasons for delaying the conception of a child?
Well, we have to look at what the church has had to say about family size, and it's never been the case that the church has mandated that you have to have as many children as you can possibly create, and that a woman has to just go through life, you know, let's say barefoot and pregnant, right? That's never been the case. You have to take into account so many of the different considerations. There are psychological, there are monetary, there are all kinds of reasons why a couple might have to delay pregnancy. Some of the wrong reasons might be like, well, we'd really like a new boat.
Which could be held up as a monetary reason. I mean, we can't afford another child, because if we did, how are we going to get that boat?
Or keep the one we have.
Or keep the one we have.
You know, we look at the way things go in our country, and, you know, we see, in our case, you know, we see families that have larger houses. Each child has his or her own bedroom, better cars than we have, and a lot of things like that. And we've always had to make a decision about, you know, what can we do this vacation, right? I know.
Well, right. I think what natural family planning has done for us is that it forces us to each month really have to sit down and talk about it. You know, why are we postponing? Why are we and to bring up that discussion on a monthly basis. I think that keeping that, you know, when you contracept, that could go unspoken about for a long time.
I think that's a very good point. When you practice natural family planning, it really draws the couple into a new depth of relationship. Mm-hmm. Pills, other artificial, you're right, you just set all that aside, let the pill work, and we don't even have to think about this. We don't have to talk about it. Right. We may not even have to take it all that seriously.
Right.
That's a very
right.
good point.
Yeah, and I think that's been what's been really good for us is I don't think we necessarily set out at the beginning of our marriage to have six kids. You know, we always wanted a bigger family, but I think what it does is when you really get down to why we're postponing, sometimes those reasons don't really make any sense anymore, and you're like, you know, another baby'd be good. So I think that it's made us more open. Maybe we didn't start out that way at the beginning of our marriage, but month after month, having these conversations really does open you up to just being open to having kids.
Yeah, and if, for example, I just recently retired from the Air Force, but during that time of our marriage, we moved quite a bit, and we would come up to a point where we're looking at, okay, we're going to be moving in 6 months or a year from now, and we'd like to have another child. We feel that that's what we're being called to do, but that doesn't mean that we can't have some say in when it might happen. And so some of what we considered good reasons were, do we want to have a baby with the doctor that you know here before we move, so that we're not trying to go through this move process with Christine being pregnant and then having to find a new doctor right when we get to another place. So it gives some idea for us about how we can try to cooperate with God, but not ignore the factors that are affecting our lives. And the church has always said you have to take these things into account. Do you have the means to support a child? Are you as a couple in a situation where you can be together and cooperate with each other in the raising of the child? And if there are factors that might say no, right, we can't do those things for whatever reason, delaying or postponing pregnancy, it may be in fact the right decision, and you could even go so far as saying that you're being careless in choosing to have a child at a particular time when there are factors that probably say might be best to wait a little bit.
Right. Of course, Pope Paul VI did devote a section of his encyclical Humanae Vitae to the concept of responsible parenthood. The church recognizes that. I was wondering if in your experience, it's certainly been a bit in my experience, that it seems in many cases today that it's difficult for either engaged or certainly married couples to clearly see children as a gift and a blessing in their marriage. That may sound strange, but in the sense that it seems like so many other things can come first. And if all of these other things are somehow taken care of, if they fall into place, well, then maybe we'll think about children, sort of forgetting not only what a blessing a child is, not something to sort of be tolerated if there's enough time and money and all of that. Do you find that kind of an attitude? And I don't mean to be judgmental. I think it's part of the age, the culture that we live in, where sexual activity is exalted and has been now so in some ways completely separated from the procreation of children, in some cases even separated from love and affection. It just stands out there all by itself. In the couples that you work with, is that a kind of an attitude that you see? Maybe I'm overstating that.
No, I think what you're pointing to is a phenomenon that we've seen in the West in general. As materialism has become sort of the order of the day, it's been easier to sort of push this other part of our lives aside because the trips, the cars, flat screen TVs, you know, these kinds of things, which admittedly we struggle with ourselves in terms of keeping up with the Joneses. In that sense, it's real difficult now for any married couple to sort of fight against this secular tide of materialism that has just washed over. And we've seen the effects of this in Europe in a very profound way. We're not there in the United States, but that constant bombardment, that message that we get constantly from society, makes it much more difficult to kind of discern what is genuinely important. When you go to places that aren't influenced by popular media as much, and I'm thinking, you know, primarily things like the Third World, they have a much different view of life and very much appreciate the blessing of children.
Well, and I think too, I think people think that like a woman or a married couple, you know, we can have it all. We can have the careers and then have the kids. And that gets pushed off till they're 35 or 40. And really, fertility, it is the greatest in your 20s. And once you hit 30, it really starts, I mean, obviously that's a generalization, but it starts to drop. And that's why you have all of these reproductive technologies that are out there. People are wanting to have that baby, and they kind of think they can have it all. And I think you can have it all, just not all at once. You know what I'm saying? Well, you have your family. At some point, I will be able to go out and do more volunteer work or maybe do something that I want to do for myself, but you can't push everything until later because people are finding that they can't get pregnant.
And even couples, you know, when they get married, so often you hear them say, well, oh no, we have other things to do first. Children are further down the line. I recall somebody saying something to me a while back. I don't know if it's a very good analogy, but why would you get married and then say, we'll talk about children later? He said it's like buying a new car and then saying, but I think I'll wait a couple years before I drive it. Why are you getting married? Well, we're getting married because we love one another. Great. There's more to it than that, and I think maybe we've missed in our teaching, in our catechesis, with regard to marriage.
Well, I think that, like, when people get married, a lot of times people get married because they love each other and they want to be together, but I think people forget that marriage is for families.
Exactly. Natural family planning is really kind of an umbrella term for a number, well, at least a couple of technologies, which are probably similar. We don't want to get too technical, but maybe you could mention what some of those technologies are and the names that they have.
Sure. Knowledge of a woman's cycle and her fertility has been ongoing for a long time. You can even go back, interestingly enough, to some of the Jewish laws about when a couple would get married in terms of when they should abstain during the menstrual time and how long after the end of the menstrual time they should continue to abstain and then have relations. In general, that law puts it into the most fertile time for a woman, because God wanted his people to build up a mighty nation. And so they were focusing, through God's wisdom, on a woman's fertile time. But as this knowledge, scientific knowledge, has progressed, different methods of natural family planning have come about. The first one that we would really know about is called the calendar rhythm method. And that brings in some very basic assumptions about how a woman's cycle functions and shows you when the most fertile times would be in general and then the non-fertile times. As the science and understanding of the reproductive system advanced, we started seeing more detailed methods of natural family planning. One of the earliest is called the Billings method, and it would focus on a particular symptom that a woman exhibits and observing and then interpreting that symptom.
Yeah. Let's just pause there for just a second, Charlie. Sometimes we hear that the natural family planning methods that we look at today are really nothing other than rhythm, and people of a former generations will say rhythm really wasn't very as accurate as we would have liked it to have been, and it is based upon the fact that a woman's cycle is very regular, which is simply not true of every woman. And therefore, the less true it is, I guess the less accurate the rhythm method was. But the means of natural family planning, the technologies that we have today, really pay attention to each individual woman. And the couple is taught to learn their own cycles and rhythms, et cetera, and not just base it upon some general formula, correct?
Yes, that's correct. All of the modern methods, which include, to my knowledge, basically three, the Billings method, the Creighton method, and then the symptothermal method, which is the method that we've been trained in to teach through the Couple-to-Couple League, are targeted specifically, exactly as you said, for each woman. And the interesting thing is, from cycle to cycle, because a lot of people don't really know what kinds of things can affect a woman's cycle and either delay ovulation, and therefore from time to time, even a very regular woman will see changes and shifts in her cycle. So that's what's great about the modern methods of natural family planning, is that they do focus in on those.
Okay, we're going to take another short break and we'll come back and continue our discussion about natural family planning.
In 2006, the Colorado Catholic Herald was voted the nation's number one diocesan newspaper in its class. The Herald offers a wide variety of stories on the local, national, and world level, as well as your letters and the best columns in the Catholic press. The Colorado Catholic Herald is a newspaper you can be proud of. If you are registered with a parish in the Diocese of Colorado Springs, you should be receiving the Herald. If not, please call us at 719-866-6492. That's 719-866-6492. The Colorado Catholic Herald, bringing the Catholic world to you.
Welcome back. Before our break, we were talking about natural family planning as that has been practiced, manifested itself in a number of different ways and with different kinds of technologies. We made mention of the rhythm method, which really is a natural family planning method, but what would you say was the degree overall of efficacy of natural family planning as rhythm, what we know as the rhythm method?
Most of the scientific studies that we have that show somewhere in the mid, maybe even high 80s, as far as how effective it is in terms of postponing pregnancy. Interestingly enough, that matches up very closely with the barrier methods, primarily condoms, show a similar level of efficacy. When the rhythm method was discovered, at the same time, condoms were becoming more available, primarily due to the fact that most of the Protestant churches, and this is late 20s, maybe 1930, decided to make a split and changed their teaching on what was licit within a marriage. Okay,
and it's good to note we meaning the Christian denominations, Catholics, Protestants, we were pretty much together, weren't we, on all of this until the 20th century?
That's correct. You have 1,930 years of agreement on the immorality of contraception. Mm-hmm. In 1930, we had where the Protestant churches of America...
Was the Church of England specifically, wasn't it, at their Lambeth Conference?
That's correct. Yeah. They started that, and then in 1931, I think it was the Protestant Churches of America, an umbrella organization for many Protestant churches, then embraced that teaching. But, interestingly enough, they said only within the confines of marriage would this be licit. And there were some other stipulations kind of put on there, but they were trying to respond to issues of that time. Unfortunately, they didn't have the full story. Mm. But we have that in place in society. Science also gave us rhythm, and the Catholic Church recognized this is a licit way to cooperate, to not contracept, to cooperate with God's plan. You have the encyclical Castae Connubii reinforcing and reaffirming the church's teaching and addressing many of the social concerns of the day that the Protestant churches were trying to address by introducing contraception within marriage. The Catholic Church comes with Castae Connubii saying some different things.
It's kind of interesting when we note that the efficacy, the accuracy of the rhythm method is not that much different, as you said, from the efficacy of condoms, and yet condoms are touted by so many as the answer to all of our worries, and it's just not true either. Now, we don't want to reduce this to what works the best, but to hold up condoms as the solution to everything, not quite true. How do we rate the efficacy, the accuracy of natural family planning methods today, in those that you talked about, Creighton, Billings, etc.?
What we find, and I don't want to get too technical because there are some different things you have to look at. When the method is practiced as described, you are talking about 99% plus efficacy in terms of preventing pregnancies with any of those three methods, Creighton, Billings, or the symptothermal
method. So other than abstinence, natural family planning is is the best method.
That's correct.
Total abstinence.
That's correct. Look, if you don't want to have children, you either abstain or you go through the process of castration, right? Removal of the organs from either the male or the female. Those are the only 100%. The pill is not 100%. Shots are not 100%. Even vasectomies, many people think this, or tubal ligations. And those two procedures themselves have so many, as we're continuing to discover more and more, negative side effects. But even those, many people think, once I do that, I'm good to go.
What we know then is that not only is natural family planning the moral, the licit way to do things, it's the best. Scientifically, it is the most accurate means of judging a woman's fertile and infertile periods for both the delay of conception or when conception is most likely to take place. So could be
it's the same science that was used to create the oral contraceptive pill and its newer variants now is the exact same science that led us to discover the methods and how to implement the methods of natural family planning. That's what's sort of maybe ironic about it, is the same science can be used to produce what we would consider an evil or a good. And in this case, that foundation is identical.
We don't want to get too technical or too clinical, but give us a little overview of what goes into natural family planning, because it is something that a couple has to learn and learn from usually medical professionals, right? How to do it? Am I right on that?
Well, I might have missed my years in medical school, but all of our couples are teaching couples. We do have a medical professional that is a teaching couple, but lay couples from all backgrounds can be certified to teach natural family planning. Maybe you want to give a little
all of the science of it, huh? How to do it?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. Interestingly, as a quick aside, Mother Teresa taught a version of natural family planning in India to illiterate peasants in the country and achieved, effective rates of being able to plan families.
Well, tell us simply, what goes into this?
Well, we got certified to teach the Symptothermal Method, and it's a class that has three times, and so after basically 3 months, there's a month in between each class, you're charting. When you walk away from the first class, you have all the basics to be able to use the method. So then you have a month to chart, you come back, learn a little bit more. It's very straightforward. I think it can be kind of daunting at first when people look at the charts, but it really becomes very second nature. I mean, after a couple of months of charting, when Charlie and I first started using NFP like 17 years ago, I was charting and I took my stuff into the woman that taught us the method, and I said, this isn't working, look, and she just sat there and said, of course it is, and she helped me to kind of make sense of everything, and after that, I mean, it's just like second nature.
So you say at the first class, all of the basics are there, and then for the subsequent classes, it's just a matter of making sure that they're doing
right.
What they're supposed to
we
do,
have
getting
homework,
used to it. Yeah,
you know, we do things in class together, kind of looking at charts, being able to read the charts, practice charts. There's time to kind of go over. They'll bring their charts in, and we can help them look at their charts and counsel them and, you know, if they have questions. So each subsequent class brings in a little more detail to the method and some of the, obviously, the science behind the method, and then also some of the theology of the body of why we're doing it, why the church is teaching, why the church says what it says.
What do you say to couples? I presume maybe a couple or two has brought this up. What do you say to couples who say, oh, this all sounds so terribly clinical. We just love spontaneity in our marriage. And this is just making this whole thing so burdensome. What do you say to them?
Yeah, that's a common question that comes up. And first I say, let's have trust in God that He knows what's going on, and I think you will find that that's not necessarily the case. In other words, it's not the case that it squashes spontaneity. When we talk about charting, as a woman goes through her regular routine of the day, there are opportunities for her to observe some of the different signs as they relate to fertility, be it temperature, be it mucus, or some other signs that a woman can monitor. So there's nothing changed in any sort of daily routine in that regard.
It's not as if you're sitting in a laboratory all day long.
No, that's correct. That's correct. And so in terms of really getting at this idea of spontaneity, I think that's kind of a societal myth. I don't know any married couples that are just sort of floating about their day with no plans, and all of a sudden they get this idea in the head, hey, hon, let's go jump in the bedroom now. We have work schedules. We have school. If you have children, you're having to plan all aspects of your day all the time, and very rarely is it the case that a couple is finding themselves with just nothing to do when all of a sudden they say, okay, let's do this. And even if that is the case, they have an opportunity most of the time in the cycle. The days of abstinence are the minority part of a woman's cycle.
Well, and I think too, you come up with other ways to show your affection. You get more creative in that's not the only, you know, having relations is not the only way to show love and affection for your spouse. You know, it forces you to say, okay, well, let's go out and have a glass of wine or a coffee or go for a walk or, you know, something like that. It forces you to have to do that. And then it makes the time that you do have for relations something to look forward to, something to, plan for.
All of this, I think, just helps a couple to take their married life, their sexual relationship, to take it very seriously. Now seriously doesn't mean burdensome or morose or anything else, but I think this whole business is about spontaneity is another way of saying we don't want to think about anything. We don't want to take all this stuff too seriously. And so spontaneity becomes that sort of secular virtue that we want to use to wipe out any of this natural family planning. So yeah, I don't really buy it that much either, but
yeah, I think that we're always looking at these things, and you know, we've had couples that have been going through our class that have come to realize that they are going to be in a very fertile phase during their honeymoon, and it's actually a very good opportunity to get them on the track at the very beginning to discuss, well, God's maybe sending you a message. I don't want to get too, you know, into what that might mean, but what are you going to do about that? Because this won't be the only time you'll encounter something like this.
Well, and I think people need to realize, too, that you're always going to have periods of abstinence in your marriage, whether it's a spouse, Charlie, being deployed for a year, you know, or 5 months here, business trips, sickness, you know, postpartum, where having relations is not an option at that time. And when you practice that every month, you have that time, week or whatever it is, that gives you practice for the big times when you really, we might have to be separated for an extended period, that you can do that. It's not
it's the end of the world.
Exactly.
Right.
It's not something awful. And I think you said helps to look forward to
right.
when you will be together. Great. We're going to pause again for another quick break, and we'll be right back.
If you're a business owner or you're looking to sell a product or service, target your market in these tough economic times and spend your advertising dollars wisely with the Colorado Catholic Herald. The Colorado Catholic Herald is the official newspaper of the Diocese of Colorado Springs, delivered straight to the mailboxes of more than 69,000 readers. Call Chris Reynolds today at 719-866-6519 or visit us on the web at www.coloradocatholicherald.com. The Colorado Catholic Herald, too big, too loyal, too important to ignore.
Welcome back now to our last segment. We are talking about natural family planning with Charlie and Christine McIntyre, who themselves in their own marriage have used natural family planning, I think you said, Charlie, for 16 years, or maybe it was you, Christine. How long have you been teaching this to other couples?
We've been almost 10 years now is when we became certified as a teaching couple with the couple-to-couple league.
Okay. Why don't you reflect a little bit about natural family planning in your marriage, how you've seen that, not just as a means of spacing children, which it is, but how that's helped to strengthen your own marriage?
For our marriage prep in the San Antonio Diocese, so that was like 17 years ago, was required. And so we took the Billings method. That's what they were teaching there. And so we kind of started out thinking when we got married, you know, we would use the pill because that was out there. And that was kind of what we thought was available. And then we were required to take this class. And we heard the science and some of the side effects, whatever. And I guess we were just open enough, or you'd say stupid enough, to think, wow, this makes sense. We should do this. And so that's what we did. And we kind of just took it at face value that it was going to be a good thing. And so from the get-go, we've always used NFP in some form. I think it's always been a positive thing. At times, it could be difficult, you know. There are times of abstinence. But I think all of the good stuff really outweighs those challenging times. And those challenging times always just help you to grow.
And in general now, what are we talking about, numbers of days per month of abstinence?
I think on average, maybe 5 to 7 days for an average healthy woman.
It varies, right, and maybe as many as 10. But the interesting thing is that, without getting into a lot of the technical details, if you have fewer days of abstinence or more, I want to focus again on the fact that the times that are available outside of the fertile period are at least 2 to 1, you know. That's probably about the best ratio to look at. So the fertile versus the infertile time, it's about 2 to 1 ratio in general.
And I think our culture today is so saturated, it seems, with sex, is trying to convince us that this would just be terribly burdensome. I know in my years of preparing couples for marriage, I would run in from time to time, especially the men, who were convinced that if they abstained for 5 to 10 days, they would just go slowly insane over those 10 days and never be able to recover from it. But I mean, this is what we hear. I mean, if you're not having sex whenever, you're going to go mentally or physically ill, and that just shows you the exaggerations that are out there.
Well, there are some studies, and people have been looking at this, and there is a lot of data to indicate that in many instances, couples that practice NFP actually have relations more than couples that don't. So there is some information and data out there to suggest that. It may be a bit inconclusive, but the point there is NFP couples aren't having less sex than anybody else, and in fact may be having more.
And maybe just at different times.
That's correct.
Right, right. You've been teaching for a number of years. Any stories you have, no names, but about some of the couples you've worked with and how they've come to appreciate NFP in their marriage?
Yeah, we've got a couple. I mean, more than a couple, but I will say generically this, that we have at least one couple per class that has been on the pill, that's decided to come off of the pill. And by the time the series is over, we have these women saying, I did not know I could feel this good again. The bloating, the moodiness, the weight gain, all of the negative side effects that come with the pill are gone because they're off of that now. And husband's saying, this is a different woman. I knew the woman I married. We got on the pill. Her personality changed completely. Now I have this old woman, you know, my wife back again, this woman that I fell in love with because she's gotten away from all of that. That's every single class we have at least one couple like that. But I think Christine has a story about one couple that really had an interesting encounter with it.
Well, we had a couple that we taught who was on a hormonal, an injectable birth control. Not even, well, I guess maybe for 4 or 5 years, and she got off of that, and it took 18 months for her to see any kind of observable sign of her cycle that she ovulated. And I remember, you know, she'd come back month after month, and we'd look at her chart, and there was nothing. And I was saying to Charlie, I don't know what to tell her, you know. And eventually her fertility did come back, and now they have 4 kids, and they're using the method. But I don't think people realize what they're putting in their bodies and how that can really be destructive.
The oral contraceptive in particular was touted as the great panacea. This was the answer to all the questions that we had. And in fact, there's all sorts of downsides, dangers to the oral contraceptive, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are. Get an insert from the pharmacy and just read it. If you want to increase moodiness, increase weight, increase your chance for heart disease, blood clots, certain forms of breast cancer, sure, go ahead and take that stuff. I wouldn't put that into my body. And there's no way I would, as a, you know, husband and leader of the family, have my daughters or my wife or anybody, why would you take that kind of risk when it's unnecessary? I mean, the reality is that women do die as a result of taking the pill.
Nobody dies from natural family planning.
No, they might think so at the beginning, but that's exactly right. As an interesting story as well, we had a couple. A woman that was taking her temperatures. Another benefit to natural family planning is that it can make a woman more aware of what's going on with her body. We had a woman that came in and her temperatures, as she was observing them, were very, very low. Her waking basal, it's called the basal temperature. And we had gotten in our training some indications of what might cause that. And one of the ideas was that it might be a thyroid problem. And we said, you know, you might want to check with your doctor because these are very low. Turns out, in fact, she did have other symptoms that her doctor didn't pick up on. She did have a thyroid problem, and she learned about it because she was using NFP.
We were talking during the break about the irony of our living in what's being promoted now as a very green time when we want to go as natural as we can, avoid anything that pollutes either our bodies or the environment or anything. Actually, these artificial contraceptives, I mean the chemical ones, there's evidence that they're already polluting, right? The waste from that is already polluting our waters.
That's correct. The hormones that are made for, whether it's an injectable or an orally taken or a patch or even the cervical rings, those are synthetic. Our body does not break them down. Once they've done the work in the body, they've been excreted into the water. And these things are being measured. When you look at patches in these cervical rings, those go into landfills. And again, they just continue to pump those synthetic hormones into the system. And there, we've seen things, frogs and fish and things, that have been affected by this in the environment, and the sciences studies are ongoing even now, but there are measurable traces of these very synthetic hormones in everything that we're all drinking. Whether we want to participate or not, we're getting exposed to some of this.
So if we want to be genuinely and completely green, natural family planning fits right into that, and chemical contraceptives do not. They fly right in the face. I think we should say something about not only about the physical dangers of the oral contraceptive and other other chemical contraceptives, but let's make sure our listeners know clearly that these contraceptives can also serve as abortifacients. In certain circumstances, they can actually cause abortions, correct?
That's right. The basic mechanism for any sort of hormonal birth control is that it changes cervical mucus so that sperm have a more difficult time passing. It also should suppress ovulation so a woman actually does not emit an egg, and then it also changes the lining of the uterus to cause that to slough off. When a woman that's on the pill has a period, she's not really having a period. Body is being forced to do this. So with the more modern formulations of the pill, to reduce some of the side effects that women complained about, they reduce the particular component of it that suppresses ovulation. So it's much more common now. There's data to show anywhere from 10 to maybe even 50% of the time a woman actually ovulates, even when she's on the pill. That egg can be fertilized by sperm if everything goes that way. And we see it in their own literature. The pill is not 100% effective. Women ovulate on the pill. Women get pregnant on the pill. I think anybody's listening probably knows of somebody in their life that has had a pill baby, as they call them. The reality is when those new lives are formed, that flushing, that period, is considered an abortion. If the pill is called an abortifacient, when you look at things like the morning after pill and these things that are coming on the market, same formulation, just different dosing that causes that abortion. And many women don't know that in fact they may be having an abortion or experiencing that when she's having her menstrual flow based on the pill. There's no way to know exactly, but it's that potential's there.
We have to be careful then of these, as you say, hormonal means of contraception. Lots of potential bad effects of them. Here in the Diocese of Colorado Springs, for several years now, we've asked all couples preparing for marriage to learn natural family planning. So many of them not even knowing it existed, thinking that if they did think there was good reason to delay the conception of a child, the only way to do it was by some artificial means. So we're trying to open up to these couples this other way, which is quite legitimate. And Charlie, you and your wife Christine helped to teach this to engaged couples. We need more teachers, though, don't we?
Yeah, we do need more teachers. I think there's four of us that teach the couple-to-couple, the symptothermal method through the couple-to-couple league. I know, and we have another teaching couple that teaches the Creighton method here, and I think that's about it in Colorado Springs.
Well, if there's anybody out there listening to this program who appreciates natural family planning and is willing to give some time, I would invite them to call me personally, and I'll put them in touch with you and our other teaching couples, and they can be of great help here in the diocese. Well, we're coming to the end of our time. Charlie and Christine, thank you so much for being with us. Thanks to all of our listeners. We hope you've learned a little bit about natural family planning and how it can be so important in supporting a good Christian marriage. So I'll leave you now with this blessing. May the blessing of Almighty God, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit come upon all of you and stay with you forever. Amen. We'll see you next time.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Bishop Sheridan Presents on the Catholic Radio Network. Join us each week as Bishop Michael Sheridan of the Diocese of Colorado Springs discusses topics relevant to your life and your faith. Bishop Sheridan Presents is a production of the Catholic Radio Network and the Diocese of Colorado Springs. If there is a topic that you'd like to hear covered by Bishop Sheridan Presents, please call the Catholic Radio Network at 970-669-8000. Thanks again for listening to Bishop Sheridan Presents, brought to you by the Colorado Catholic Herald,
the official newspaper of the Diocese of Colorado Springs.